I did this topic was several years ago, and I took 5 hours. So, are you ready? I announced at supper, as part of the invitation to this session, I use a phrase, those who whose spiritual life is perfect need not come. If we would say to one another, how's your spiritual life? You probably would give an answer of some kind, but I'd like to get behind the kind of answer you would give. What do you think we would mean by the question? In other words, you'd be answering in regard to and describing what? You willing to share? Pardon? What does that mean? What would it mean if I ask you about your spirituality? Or how is your spiritual life? You would give me a reading on what?
How often you prayed.
How often you went to church.
Meditation
time. How it was helping, hindering, not happening. Reuben.
That balance between what you believe and what you do.
All right. Balance between what you believe and what you do. Other things. How's your spiritual life? What comes to mind first?
Otherworldly,
okay? Other things?
What's your emotional state?
Emotional state. Cynthia?
Your relationship to God.
Relationship to God, okay?
How's your whole being?
Okay. Whole being. How's your whole being?
What you think about when you're not doing anything else.
That's a good one. What you think about when you're not doing anything else, all right? Tosh?
I was going to say, how quiet.
Another good one. How quiet is it when you stop talking?
How alive do you feel?
How alive do you feel, right?
I'm going to turn the board around. All of these are quotes from Wallace's chapter on roots.
What I really want to do tonight is to continue our moving into that chapter. Mary introduced it Monday. This is the second go at it, and we come back on Friday, and I hope that you reread it between now and Friday. Spiritual worship, renewal of your mind, being transformed, being refreshed, rekindled, fruits of the Spirit, gifts of the Spirit, praise, Eucharist, life together, way of the cross, and experience vulnerability. If those are the key terms, I'm not sure they're the key ones, I think they are, in that chapter, do you know what Jim Wallace means by spirituality? If this is his chapter on spirituality and these are the phrases that describe that chapter, do you either confirm any of the things you already said or take a different tack if you were going to be Jim Wallace talking about spirituality? What does that list do to the first feedback you all gave?
For me, they'd be
similar. Similar to,
yeah,
to our feedback, all right? Any other comments on his list? Does it have aspects that we did not bring out?
I think what we brought out, it was more of an untouchable kind of thing, a mind thing, a windy thing, whereas some of these that are listed are actions that you can see, put mind and body and feeling together.
Okay. All right. Other reactions?
There are things on the list that I would never have thought of.
Life.
Life
okay. I'm going to leave that there. The reason I have two of them, I'm going to leave that there and come back to Wallace. Now I want to read you a quote from Wallace. Page 142, if you brought your book. I didn't really ask you to do that, but
third paragraph down, I was the victim of a trap that continues to confound and paralyze much of the church today. It's the trap of dividing the church between those who regard the gospel as principally spiritual and those who see the gospel as primarily political. If you set spiritual over against political, how many of you would do that? Set spiritual as over against political. Okay? When you did that, or if you did that, what are you doing? Give me content to political so that then I understand how spiritual is the other side of the coin or something different. Let me read it once more. Sacred secular, okay? Other ways of saying that?
Inside, outside,
all right. Here.
This world, other world.
All right.
Political might imply practical on the one hand or compromising on the other.
And then spiritual would be more
ideal and uncompromising.
More pure, more ideal, as it over against the real. Okay, we have to start with some descriptions and some terms, even though that's probably the least helpful as far as this session kind of getting at where we are and what our spiritual life is, because I think we use terms too loosely. Let me put some things on the board that I think we confuse with one another sometimes or simply are not clear when we use them. All of those are distinct things, and I think it's helpful for us to use them more clearly than we normally do. For instance, we come down heavy against people whose prayer life is primarily gimme prayers, primarily petition or asking for things. What does prayer mean in the dictionary? In a religious dictionary, in a theological journal, yes. Dictionary meaning you use it outside of religion. I'll give you the phrase, which is the dictionary phrase. Give me the book, I pray thee. You ever heard that? It's a petition. It's beseeching. It's begging. Why is it so funny that much of our prayers are beseeching? That's what the word means. Now, I'm not saying that's a complete relationship with God, but prayer, by dictionary definition, has more to do with beseech and beg than some of the other things on the board. Okay, I'm just saying sometimes it's important to be careful. Meditate, meditation. What does that mean to you?
Sit around and look glum.
Sit around and look glum. Right. Anybody here not an Episcopalian? Again, I'm really asking for some precision. If not the dictionary definition, meditation means
focusing your thoughts.
To think deeply, to focus your thoughts, to reflect on. Right? Do you use meditate and contemplate interchangeably? Is there a difference between meditate and contemplate? What is contemplate? To gaze intently at. All right. It has more to do with seeing than it does with, okay, to think deeply about. Piety. It's a dirty word, the pietists. Dirty word, isn't it? Oof. I really think this is the one most often confused with spirituality. Devotion to religious duties. There's nothing specially negative about that. Devotion to religious duties. Roxy was free enough and honest enough at the beginning to say what she thought when she thought spirituality, and she listed all forms of piety. My daily prayers, my going to church, my reading the Bible. There's nothing negative about that all. But that is piety. That is not spirituality. How important is that? Well, let's wait and see if it's important to make a distinction.
Mysticism.
Eastern religion.
That's an interesting first comment. Eastern religions. You could read a book by Hoffman, Luther the Mystic. Would that surprise you?
Wow, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Visions?
Visions, all right.
Except in
all right. There is, how to say this? Everything that has been said is legitimately associated with forms of mysticism. I'm pushing for more narrow at the beginning so that we can expand it. Narrowly speaking, kind of clearly speaking, mysticism asserts the possibility of knowledge of spiritual truth through intuition acquired by fixed meditation. A mystic is one who professes to have an immediate awareness of God's presence. An immediate awareness of God's presence. Not that you read a book or hear a sermon or have right theology, but practicing the presence of God is more mystical. Then you say, I got that by intuitive, I felt it. I mean, there's lots of other things that go with that. But mysticism, what would St. Paul mean if he was caught up into the third heaven? Is that a mystical experience? Are there descriptions of mystical experiences in the scriptures, Old and New Testament? Yeah. Asceticism. Self-denial. Doctrine that one can reach a higher spiritual state through rigorous self-denial. Liturgy. The work of the people of God. It does come from a word for work. For us, it's almost equated with corporate worship. All right. What did I leave off the board? Spirituality. It's at the top of the list. Where would you put spirituality in the list? All right. And more. But at least the whole thing. All right. Now, if spirituality refers to the totality of that and more, it's important for you to have content to spirituality, not only by definition, but to have some assumptions about spiritual, almost as though it's one of the basic understandings or perceptions that will lead to a kind of piety, a sense of mysticism or not. Whether you would see asceticism as a route to spiritual perfection or deny that would depend upon the kind of spirituality that we're talking about. And here I'm going to do something which I've done in the winter program before. I've warned you about doing it before. There are two kinds of people in the world, those who will divide the world into two kinds of people and those who will not, who refuse to do that because it is always with limitations and with some misconceptions, but in regard to spirituality, I think it is really helpful. And I'm glad. Just don't press what we're doing too far, just get a kind of sense of the two columns. And then we're going to erase it and go on from there. And I'm going to use Dan's that he used the other day, Greek, Hebrew. I'm going to have a couple other titles at the top that I think help. Neoplatonic, I'll tell you about that. And I'm going to put one that may surprise you. Religious. Sometime before the end of the winter program, I'm going to test the hypothesis that Christianity is in fact the end of religion. It is not one of the world's religions. Are you interested in that one, Mike?
I was ready.
Hebrew, biblical, and incarnational. In case you didn't know it, whenever the teacher makes two columns, one's the good and one's the bad. One's the straw man get knocked out. Which do you think's going to win? All right. Just let me go through this enough that you get a sense of it, though, because I really do think it's helpful.
All right. I'm going to start with Bill Giddings because it was on my list, but I'm delighted when it came out. The Greek, the Neoplatonic, and the religious. One of the primary things that I use by using Greek is the separation, and who was it, Cynthia or Kathy? The division of people into body, mind, spirit. That's going to run all the way through here, whereas the Hebrew is going to be more holistic, more, well, Dan, Monday night, the moving toward the age of shalom, more the concept of shalom, but idealistic, meaning in the mind, more the idea of perfect, exactly as one would desire it. It's distinguished from the real. It's based on the conception of things as one thinks they should be, realistic, and I'm going to give you what Thomas Merton starts with in New Seeds of Contemplation, alive, aware, awake, and having to do with things as they are, not with things as you wish they were. Let me take the word spirit or spiritual and take a Greek or a Hebrew understanding of that word, and then you'll begin to see the two columns a little more clearly. By definition, in our dictionary, we are now more Greek than Hebrew. Spiritual is non-material. That's Greek. The word itself in Hebrew that's translated spirit, does anybody know what the word is? If you just take the word spirit in the Old Testament, or that we translate spirit, do you know what the image is? Hebrew's always with an image. It's not abstract. Breath. Ruach. Breath. So that one of the only times I think we are consistently Hebrew is that the party last night was a spirited party. That's Hebrew. What do you mean by that? It wasn't non-material. It was alive. It was lively. That's Hebrew. Most of the rest of the time, you are Greek. She and I have a spiritual relationship. Boring and very, very specific in meaning. No sex. Oh, sure. Platonic. Well, sure, same thing. Absolutely. No touch, no sex. Spiritual relationship. Most of the time, when you have to free associate or get content to a word where for us most of the time it's something other than sensuous or material or real or takes shape, and then try to have a spirituality that's Hebrew, you have to unlearn so much that it's, I don't know if it's worth, you know, trying to bring the word back in, but it is a biblical concept, and I think it's worth trying. All right. So, Platonic, we already said, non-material. Sensuous. Matthew Fox, we, all the way home. W-H-E-E, W-E-E, W-E, all the way home. Subtitle, toward a sensuous spirituality. What does he mean by that? That includes the senses. We are so afraid, we are so Greek in our thought, that sensuous almost always means sex instead of all the senses. I mean, that shows you where we are in regard to an understanding of the scriptures as over against an understanding of a kind of Greek spirituality. Otherworldly. Mike said that, and I think that's very widely held. The Hebrew, biblical, incarnational, that's the place where you see that, is very earthy. The, who are we? Adam. Of the earth. That's our being, is to be earthy. Okay. Private. Political, social.
After the Nixon years, Jeb Magruder said we had a private morality, but not a public one. That's true. Life denying. I'm going to, these are all a little too strong. Life affirming. Boy, that's a good one to get the good guys and the bad guys. Let me explain what I have as a sublist. Regression, guilt, emphasis on heaven, sentimentality, and acts of mortification, putting down your flesh. That's very Greek. All of those are life denying. Life affirming, expressive, pleasure, this life, justice, and the development of talents. Find God by fleeing from the world. One of the reasons that Christianity is the end of religion is religions give you some way to find God by climbing to the third level of nirvana or something similar. The scandal of Christianity is the incarnation where God came to us instead of us somehow getting out of this ordinariness, this fleshy, this whatever, and rising to a spiritual state. Christianity ends the whole point of religion. Religion gives you some way to slay the fatted calf, to find the right formula, to find the right priesthood or something to rise to God. And Christianity is the opposite of that. Find God through experiencing the world. The last one won't surprise you. Matter. Sinful, at most tolerated. Matter. Created by God. And holy. Obviously, that could be a very long lecture. The things could be debated. If you want to go further, that's straight out of Matthew Fox on becoming a musical, mystical bear. Don't let the title or the cover turn you off. The publisher pushed Matthew Fox almost to the point of their separating forever. He said, this will never sell with this cover, and it'll never sell with that title, and Matthew Fox would not let any publisher have it unless it was that cover with a funny-looking bear flying, and that title on becoming a musical, mystical bear. In fact, Matthew Fox now has his own publishing company, Bear Publishing, somewhere in Arizona or New Mexico because he had so much trouble with publishers. But it's a good book on getting at this kind of thing, the difference between Greek and Hebrew spirituality. The understatement of the evening will be, given those poles of understanding, can you imagine the difference in your assumptions and in your seeking to have a full spiritual life if you're in one or the other or somewhere that separate? Can you imagine the differences in what you would consider to be spirituality when you can mean those tremendously different things by it? That's all I really want to point out before we move on. Okay, but it would be unfair to you that we didn't pause to see if you have something. I mean, if you're just screaming inside about something, okay, can we go on with it? All right. Now when we ask, how is your spiritual life? Or start talking about spirituality. Can we begin to move to things that I think Wallace has in the chapter, but his style is so different from mine, and I teach so differently that I want to pull out some of the things from his list that help me get at what spirituality is? I think I like best the times when he's talking about rootedness itself and what that means, and is emphasizing that spirituality is that which is the gift of the Spirit for me. In other words, when St. Paul talks about the spiritual man, he's not talking about something different from the physical man. He's talking about that person that's receiving the gifts of God, using the gifts of God, is fully alive, as opposed to that person who is refusing God's gifts or the fruits of God's Spirit. Another way to say that is to use the life-giving and the life-denying, the life-affirming and the life-denying attributes. Another way to say that would be that which is healthy and that which is unhealthy. Do you use that one in your own? I mean, that's a healthy thing or that's an unhealthy thing. I think that's a fairly good way of talking about possible spiritualities. Almost any activity or almost any relationship or almost anything else you can think of could be either life-giving, life-affirming, or life-denying. Am I right? So you can't go from the activity. Take one. Test it out. Going to church. Don't tell me it can't be life-denying as well as life-affirming. Sex. Food. Can you think of one that can't be either? I started, when we had a full week, I started with a list. Check those, only those things that would be included in your spirituality. And I had a list that included taking the Lord's Supper. Everyone checked it. Having beer with a friend. Sexual intercourse. Only if you love the other person. Was the condition as the next one. Only if you're married to the other person. That picked up a lot of people that didn't check it before. I say, all right. What am I saying? That the activity, that when you give a list of the things that are included in spirituality, as though you will be spiritual when you pray, when you go to church, when you read your Bible, misses the point of what's life-affirming and what's life-denying. So there has to be another way or a deeper way or a different way of getting at it. Ways of keeping God's love or life alive in us. Is that coming? Ways of keeping God's love or life alive in us. We had this session this morning at 10:30 to 11:45 for you that didn't sit around after coffee hour. It started spontaneously, and we had almost an hour and 15 minutes on what essentially was spirituality. The scandal of Christianity, it's not that everything is spirituality. That's not true. But the scandal of Christianity is where some other people would say that which is life-affirming is basically when you learn to take care of yourself, even to the point of the pleasure principle and hedonism. Christianity says, no, that's not life-affirming at all. In fact, that's death-dealing. The scandal of Christianity is that we say that which is spirituality is shaped by an understanding of the gospel of God in Jesus Christ. The scandal of Christianity is the way you affirm your life is by losing it. That's where the scandal comes, because that's the heart of spirituality. Can you sense? Can you sense that? It isn't as though Christianity now says yes to everything and there are no guidelines as to what's spiritual and not spiritual. Jesus Christ is the guideline to what's spiritual and not spiritual. But it isn't certain activities. It's whether or not the scandal of the gospel of losing your life, or the scandal of crucified love, or the scandal of forgiveness without an end, whether that is really life-affirming, meaning that's what it means to be fully alive. I would say that you can test some of those. Is the scriptural understanding of spirituality correct when it says that confession and forgiveness are part of what it means to be fully alive? The psalmist could not be more clear. When I confess not my sins, what happened? My bones roared all day long. Is that literally true? carry around unconfession and see whether or not your bowels tell you whether it's life-affirming or life-denying. Let your body tell you. The whole business of listening to your body is very much Hebrew spirituality. That's people act like they found some new insight into listening to their body. The psalmist has that through all of the kind of talk about prayer and forgiveness and what we might think of as your religious life. It always included the body. It was Dionysus and Augustine and 4th century Roman Catholic contemplative who said prayers are lifting hearts and minds to God. Terrible spirituality. And all of us are stuck with it ever since. What does that do? Lifting hearts and minds to God. It starts with us initiating the action. That's the first major error. Christian spirituality is always response to God's grace. Hearts and minds leaves the body out, and lifting hearts and minds puts God up. Other than that, it's a fine description of prayer. Was I fairly blunt on that? Did you understand that I didn't like that definition? Okay. Yes.
If you are living without having Jesus in you, without thinking about it at all, then whatever you do is non-spiritual. True or false? Take it or leave
it. Would someone like to bite on that one?
It came from Jesus makes whatever you do spiritual. So I'm saying if you don't have Jesus in your life, does that mean you're not, you have no spirituality?
No.
There's one. No. Anybody else agree that that's not what you believe?
I agree with you.
Speak to it, Chris. I agree with you. Speak. What?
Well, this would be a very simple answer, but people that aren't Christian are spiritual. That's my answer.
Jean, Eric, who else said they agree with this?
Well, I think that
I think you're coming back to one of the things I said, so let me say it in an expanded way, or say it differently. Anything that is life-giving to you is part of spirituality, as far as the Bible, as far as the description of the Bible is concerned. It does not have to do with a religious part of you, and it doesn't have to do with your soul instead of your body. Those concepts are not biblical. So anything which is life-giving, anything which is physically life-giving, mentally life-giving, emotionally life-giving, you are a person. You are not a soul that's inhabiting a body biblically. So anything that's life-giving is spiritual or spirituality. Anything that is death-dealing, or in other words is not enhancing your life, is non-spiritual or anti-spiritual. The scandal would be that we have some particularities because of Jesus Christ as to what's life-giving that others might say, well, that's not life-giving at all. Jesus was wrong. Or suffering love or forgiveness or servanthood instead of running the World Bank or whatever the world would call power. We would disagree at what's life-giving and what isn't, but it doesn't mean that other people aren't spiritual people. Does that, okay? One of the contributions, oh, no, I'm going to go in the same order that I'm going. Page 153 in Wallace, and I think that's consistent with Kathy's question, says this. Worship is to resistance as a tree's roots are to its branches. And then I think he has the primary reason that he uses roots as the chapter title. Among the dictionary definitions of roots are the following: a means of anchorage and support, an underlying support or basis, and the essential core or heart. Let me give you another way that we've done that at Holden. If we had had the time tonight or had two sessions, I would have started tonight by having around the room on some posters. Walking in the mountains or walking in nature, sports activities, music, small prayer group, solitude, good books, corporate worship, contemplation, get the kind of list, and we would have gone and stood under one of those where you most often get your energy or get refreshed. When you had determined that out of a list, I would have said you have now named the primary roots or source of your spirituality. Would you think that would have been hokey, or is that correct, that you find your energy and you get your renewal and you get your resources where? You can answer for yourself. We don't have time to do it tonight. Part of the Christian faith is we have those resources and those roots in places where other people never look for them, including corporate worship and contemplation and meditation. Now we're getting back to some things that you thought of first as more distinctively spiritual, right? And they are included in spirituality. Part of the gospel is that those people who find only in nature and only in classical music and only in time alone miss sources of real life. In fact, miss the opportunity of being open to others in community, and miss the opportunity where in the Christian tradition or in the religious tradition of the world, there are places where God's life can be alive in us. Mary.
You said that would be where you were rooted?
You would have determined for yourself the sources or the roots.
I would say that those are expressions of what your rootedness is. I mean, if you start out with the assumption that your roots are in the gospel or in the person of Jesus Christ, as God expressed in Jesus, I might find that renewal or that awareness of God's presence through music more than corporate worship or through reading. I mean, I've just been wondering about your definition or why you're having a stand over the sheets of paper.
Okay. See, I think we're kidding ourselves if we say our roots are Jesus Christ. I think we'll find out more about where our roots are when we say where we get our energy. Go ahead, come back. Ted.
I guess I feel some of those things are learned, or we adapt to various situations and we pick up new roots and pick up new sources of energy, new sources of life for us. Mm-hmm. I think I've done that. My mood may change. I mean, not feeling the mood to get energy from walking in the mountains, but more from community or solitude. I'm not. You see what I mean by that, or it varies.
An expression.
Part of it's learned for me, or adapted,
okay.
Or discovered. I feel like my roots change. If that's how you define my spiritual roots, my roots have changed from day to day, someday. Or my misunderstanding.
Well, I don't think I've made it clear.
You're
I think
on the energy thing. That's the key. If you feel energy, then that's where it is, and it can be several things, lots of things.
Oh, yeah, the idea of standing under one of those did not mean there's only one place where you are sustained, energized, renewed, transformed, refreshed, rekindled. But if you had a variety of those, it seems to me the invitation is that there are many sources of energy. There are many roots for our spirituality. And I guess what I don't understand is Mary's question, that the gifts of the Spirit can come in lots of different ways. And in fact, the second thing we probably would have done is to move to one where you wished you now found some energy and didn't. And so it would be a kind of invitation to expand yourself in that regard. So it wouldn't have been a limiting thing. But I guess I don't know whether it's worth pushing on to a clarification between roots and outward signs.
I more pictured roots being the foundation, being our source of life in God, and all of these other things being like water or fertilizer or things that help us grow. And if
that'd be okay to push. Where is the source of life in God for you?
Well, where?
Just go with your definition of roots and now tell me where that is for you.
I think it's basically in other people and in corporate worship.
Okay, those were two of the ones on the wall. So you would have stood there.
Maybe through music or something different that might come to you in another way. But I think the source is the same. And scripture says that just as I receive Jesus Christ, I should walk in union with him rooted and established in him. And so he is my source and I depend on him. Now, he might be blessing me to some means, and that's what would be different. But my roots are in Christ.
I guess what I'm doing, I agree with you 100%, Reuben. I started with the assumption that spirituality kept alive in us, kept the life of God alive in us. So, sure, the source is God. I'm just saying that traditional spirituality, I'll make it Lutheran spirituality, is that those roots are word and sacrament. Means of grace. What does that mean? It means that the source, God, has means that are used, namely word and sacrament. That's a fairly limited spirituality. I would think the means of grace ought to be up here, but if we're not really finding our source there, if we're not finding our energy there, if God is not alive, if we are not alive there, I guess I'm pushing to say the spirituality that I understand as biblical would say God's life in you and your being fully alive are the same thing. Otherwise, I don't think you have an incarnational theology. So that when you get your energy from other people, I think that's the same as asking, where's the source of your spirituality? Sure, I'm not saying then that God has nothing to do with it. I'm getting to where you really experience God. The invitation of Christianity, the invitation of an understanding of gospel is that in the history and the tradition of the church, there are some ways in which that life in God was kept alive, and they are not dead traditions. They really are. And so word and sacrament would come into that. But I think we tend to have too limited an understanding of where that life in us is kept alive. And nothing that was around the wall would have been not religious enough, like walking nature and secular music. Is that... I'm not sure that's getting through, Patty.
So what you're saying is the only way we can know God is through what we experience, right?
So? Go ahead. I think that's agreed by no matter whose spirituality it is. I mean, if you don't experience it, you don't... I mean, but it's very Hebrew. The only way you know, the Hebrew know, Adam knew Eve. I mean, the most intimate thing you can think of would be sexual intercourse, and that's what the Hebrew is for know. All right, that's an experience, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now go ahead.
So the only kind of spirituality is that what we know, that what we miss, that what we can maybe play within our minds.
Greek is more possibly ideal, idealistic, an idea. Hebrew or biblical is always more real, that which we know. Now, I'm not saying that the only kind of spirituality is mysticism, an immediate intuitive sense of God. My spirituality includes hearing the gospel preached from a book. A mystic would put less value in theology or words about Jesus and would have it all intuitive and immediate. Well, I think that's a limited spirituality. But we don't really go ahead. Know it till we experience it. Is that your premise?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's coming back to the energy thing.
All right.
Because if it's drag, it's just not a spiritual thing. You go to church, it's a drag. That's not spiritual. That's a drag. And if you went to church and it really turned you on,
that could be the mood you're in that day. So spiritual is the mood you're in.
What do you do with the Benedictine monks who say the hours seven times a day, and Dunstan Hayden, a friend of mine who did that for 18 years, sometimes you come in and move into those psalms, and sometimes the psalms carry you by the repetition of seven times a day. You don't always have an emotional high, but they begin to carry you. Now, is there a point at which, in the tradition of the church, sometimes we take someone's word for it, that it's a drag until it becomes part of us, and then it's part of our spirituality. So there's not kind of an easy, handy-dandy kit at the end of life-denying and life-affirming. They are helpful to a point. But then sometimes we listen to the experience of other people and try something for a while that seems to be a drag. In other words, unless the service is always helium-filled balloons and the pastor is always a spiritual cheerleader, I won't go. That's not my idea of a good spirituality. I mean, I'm exaggerating what you said, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, take the last two vesper services. They were different.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of them are spiritual and energizing.
Okay.
Both of them.
I don't want to push this too far because I'm not sure I'm right on the... I'm not sure I'm in the conversation fully or in the difference of opinion of source and roots. I mean, it's not helpful for me. So if you want to go further, go ahead, Ted.
I guess I was going to say it might be helpful if you went on further. When you started to talk about we have something different in Christ that offers us more or more places to discover a sense of life.
It seems to me that the scandal of Christianity, the particularity of Christianity, is that in Jesus, when Jesus talks about what is life-affirming, the world still denies that you find your life by losing it. The world has all kinds of ways. The world has its own spirituality. It's enjoy yourself or... continue to find novel ways or get enough money or all kinds of things. So the particularity of the scandal of Jesus Christ is part of our spirituality. That does not mean that it takes away the other parts of that which is Hebrew, biblical, or incarnational. And in fact, what we've been pointing to as to the Jewishness of Jesus, or to the fulfillment of the this-worldliness of Jesus, or to a lot of other things that Wallace has, are also part of the particularity which sets Christian spirituality as over against some other too religious or too individual or too private. In other words, the particularity is shaped mostly by Jesus Christ and what life means. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Our spirituality is in that kind of life. Do you? And we'll go on with some other aspects of that. I think that may be helpful, although we're already at 9:15. Let me quote from Jim Carroll on another form of the particularity of biblical spirituality, namely the political instead of the private. The rediscovery by the church of its own fundamental identity as a worshipful people is not a flight from social political responsibility. On the contrary, once we start praying again, and once we take seriously the contemplative vision we are heirs to, we become more socially and politically restless than ever. The American denial of its own best dream is built on the premise that no one sees beneath the surface of things. No one sees behind the TV screen. If a whole gathering of people begin to see with what Rozak calls eyes of fire, then everything social and everything political is called into question. Far from amounting to a surrender of involvement in social change, the commitment to a religious, worshipful, contemplative way of life is a profoundly political act, with specific implications for everything from prison reform to exploitative trade practices. As Gandhi said, anyone who tries to do an act of religion that is not political understands neither religion nor politics. That's a very much biblical understanding of spirituality. Or let's put it another way. Martin Luther King talked about what it was to be alive, and he referred also to what it would be to be dead or death, and he put those in what we would call spiritual terms. We had this poster on the board of the church I served in the middle 60s for 5 years, I think. If a man happens to be 36 years old, as I happen to be, and some great truth stands before the door of his life, some great opportunity to stand up for that which is right and that which is just, and he refuses to stand up because he wants to live a little longer, and he is afraid his home will get bombed, or he's afraid that he will get shot, he may go on and live until he's 80. But the cessation of breathing in his life will be merely the belated announcement of an earlier death, a death of his spirit. Man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. Man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. So we're going to stand up right here and let the world know we are determined to be free. Even when you have said life-affirming, it doesn't only mean that you make sure you live for 80 years. Again, what I'm doing is, now that we have some categories, complicating it for you. But do you understand that as spirituality, what Martin Luther King just wrote? Okay. When you have this kind of spirituality, then it also brings into the consideration of a lot of the other things that we've been talking about. There are people who have questions when you talk about judgment or heaven and hell. There are people who see, but what about legalism? What about the laws of the Old Testament? I want to give you a phrase that I think is part of a good gospel-centered spirituality. You have this image for yourself of the Ten Commandments. They were 10 of the easiest possible ways to go back to Egypt. Does that help? Having just come from slavery and knowing that what we usually do is find ways to go back to slavery because freedom is too costly, take it in G.K. Chesterton terms, the mirth of God is so overwhelming that any unspiritual man cannot tolerate it. We always find ways to go back to Egypt. The Ten Commandments were warnings about the 10 most possible ways we'll choose. Does that give you any different understanding from what you normally have, as they are curbs on our good fun but necessary so that we might behave enough to go to heaven? Or how else they're used to make kids line up and have better manners, or high school kids not mess around, or how do we use them? They are warnings about that which is death dealing. They are gifts from a God who wants to affirm life. Can you sense the difference between two different kinds of spirituality? I can't tell if you can or not. Anyway, sir, yes.
So, the spirituality of the Christian is different in that what it defines life to be, or life affirming, given that spirituality
at some point
is life affirming.
Yeah. At some point. In other words, it.
I mean, others may have a spirituality that's life affirming, but what they understand to be life affirming is different. Is that right? That's what you said at the beginning.
Yes. In other words, I'm saying that to put it on the board that one is life affirming and the other is life denying is maybe helpful as a two column. But that does not mean that everything that we now have a definition, and so that you can conclude, if something will enable me to live 80 years, it must be good spirituality, and if it might bring my premature death, then it's life denying and not good spirituality. When the missionary reported back, "I'd rather burn out than rust out," I think he probably had a good spirituality. In other words, he probably died sooner than though he would have come home and not risk himself walking all over the world telling people about Jesus. Do you see what I mean? That it's helpful, but don't push it too far. I think I understand your question. Okay. Let me give you just a couple different definitions of prayer, which is the one thing we've not touched as much as we should have within spirituality, and see if you sense a different understanding of spirituality among the different things. Matthew Fox has a fairly simple definition of prayer. Prayer is laughter with God. He also has a good understanding of contemplation. It's to search out the simple. I think my favorite definition of prayer is Daniel Berrigan's, trying to tell the truth. Prayer is at least moments of honesty. If it isn't at first and foremost my most honest moments, I don't care what else it is, it will not be prayer. It isn't limited to my moments of honesty, but it is at least that. Santayana, contemplation does not lie in not acting. It does lie in living when one acts. Jim Sifkus likes these funny little sayings. It's not what you're doing, but it's what you're doing when you're doing it. It's not where you are, but it's whether you really are present where you are, wherever you are. Right? Those are helpful spirituality. All right. This is why Matthew Fox, at the end of all of that on spirituality, says spirituality is finally living and sharing life. We have spent considerable time in trying to understand that life with Wallace's words for conversion. I think his is a Christocentric book about conversion. I think he and most of us do not really have a full-blown spirituality. Spirituality is a Roman Catholic word. It's not a Protestant word. I think Jim Wallace could benefit from a letter from Dan Erlander about the absence of a real understanding of baptism in this book. I'm glad that evangelicals that spend so much time on being born again have a new appreciation, which I think means he's expanding his spirituality in regard to the Eucharist. In fact, to use the word Eucharist, I think, is a breakthrough, because that was it was usually the Lord's Supper or at most Holy Communion. I think it shows something about some expanded spiritualities in his book. My understanding of the fullness of the gospel is that in that which emphasizes life, fullness of life, wholeness of us as persons, that you can be sure if Christ came that we might have life, that it meant all of life for us, and that spirituality, the heart of the conversation this morning, that if we are to find our life by losing it, doesn't that really finally mean that you can't assert yourself, or that it is a kind of masochism that is not possible if Jesus is the epitome of what life means? But I do think that we have suffered from a much too Greek and a much too otherworldly and a much too soul, mind, body split, which is Greek, not Hebrew, that we've not understood the full gift of the gospel. What is your session on Friday morning, Dan, that picks up the final part of this chapter? Give us the essence of it. We don't need a title.
It's the meaning of worship and liturgy, and how that's draws us into a radical lifestyle.
Okay, worship and lifestyle. All right. I ask you to reread the chapter. See what you think in terms of Wallace's treatment of our roots. And if either in Dan's session or if in the So What, you want to come back to some of these things, or the result is you're interested enough to read Musical Mystical Bear or other things from Matthew Fox, let's keep the conversation going. But it's time for compliments. Thank you.